Gates.
Mystery.
Monster School.
Mayhem.
Fire her up.
Oh, what'd you say?
We're firing her up.
Fire it up. Because we saw The Crow recently.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
I forgot about that.
Little Patrick David Kelly.
Nope.
David Patrick Kelly?
Yes.
Yeah.
First try. Nailed it.
That's fine.
Good job.
He's a good dude.
Is he?
Well, he usually plays a bad guy, but from what I've heard, he's a good dude.
Okay.
David Patrick Kelly.
Oh, David Patrick Kelly.
Usually I'm the one that goes right into the stereotypes on this show, buddy.
That's not a stereotype. It's just blatant. Well,
it's
it wouldn't
just
be
blatant Irishism.
Yeah, I wouldn't say racism.
Irishism. I didn't say racism.
No, I wanted
said
to, though.
Stereotype.
Yeah.
Irishism.
I wasn't saying, like, look at this fucking
potato eating.
You got there. This potato nose looking motherfucker over here.
To be fair, I love potatoes.
And to be fair, you said he's a nice man.
Yeah, great guy.
So it would be a sweet potato.
As if I'd met him.
Because he's a sweetie.
He was in one of the best movies of all time.
The Warriors? Dennis,
that, but also pre... Commando?
Know,
did it come out after the Warriors? Dreamscape.
Never saw Dreamscape.
Oh, Dreamscape is the fucking tits.
Hmm.
It's got Dennis Quaid.
Are there tits in it?
I can't remember, but it's got Dennis Quaid.
You would remember.
And... this guy, me.
Yeah, no, that's fair.
And Max von Sydow.
Max von Sydow!
Yeah.
So you spend more of your time trying to find out who is gay and who is not gay. You don't really spend your time remembering tits.
That's true. Not really a tit guy, honestly.
Oh, really? Yeah?
No, I'm not really anything.
You're a tit boy.
No.
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 You're just a tit.
I'm an ass man.
Yeah, meat man.
Then I'm an ass man!
Should you know what? We should get going.
It's been a week of research and writing and reading.
Yeah. Because this is the annual Halloween episode. This is the first annual Halloween episode of M3 with E5. Everybody, welcome to the show. It's Mystery Monsters and Mayhem. No tengo idea.
I'm doing Foley work.
Spanish Dracula.
No, I'm doing Spanish Chucky.
Right, yeah. Yeah.
I wonder if they changed his laugh, actually.
Oh, I don't know.
We gotta look into this.
I bet he laughs like Spanish Dracula.
Yeah.
Spanish Chucky. Oh, man. This episode, last year we did an episode about the history of Accuform masks.
Yes.
And I decided that M3 with E5, every Halloween is going to be an annual episode. Now, I'm not going to say what this episode is about because I want to work up to it. Although, if you've seen the title for the show, you're going to know.
Because that's how podcasts work.
Let's just pretend it's fun.
Let's pretend we don't know how podcasts work.
Actually, I said, let's pretend it's fun.
No, that's your life in general.
Yeah, it's true. So I'm going to cut the chit-chat because I did a lot of research.
No jibber-jabber?
No jibber-jatter. Cut, you know what? Cut the chatter, Red 5.
Yes.
Cut the chatter. Because you did research, too.
Yeah.
I have, I think, I forgot, 10 or 11 pages of a script that I wrote.
That's absurd.
It is exactly for this show.
I will try not to interrupt.
In this economy?
Often. Yeah.
But
I will interrupt, though.
No, I want you to. If you got something to say, say it.
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
Yes,
so
sir.
There you
Sorry,
go.
Sir.
And actually, before we begin, I got to crack open, of course.
You couldn't have done that before. You said no chitter chatter, and yet here you are opening a beverage.
Ooh.
Oh.
It's my show. My show, but welcome everybody to the annual Halloween episode. And let's get right into it.
Please do.
You ready?
I'm tired of talking about it.
All right. The greatest show on earth. That's not just a catchy and almost overused tagline at this point. No. For many years, it was the slogan for one of the most famous circuses of all time.
I'm Brian Aerosol Pro, by the way.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I'm Epion 5.
Yeah, he's Epion 5.
You should know by now. You know who we are.
P.T. Barnum.
We're famous. Yeah, you're right. It's the Ringling Brothers and Barnum and Bailey Circus.
Yeah, that fucker.
Yep. I mean, they are
pretty much fuckers.
Yeah,
but
they
it's
are
fine.
Fuckers.
Since 1919, this traveling tent top circus has brought entertainment in its various forms for all the world to see. Now, to be fair, its history goes back even further, long before the year 1919, when Ringling Brothers was its own traveling tent top circus.
I'm my own man.
Mm-hmm. And on the other side, you had Burnham and Bailey.
Mm.
And they were an entirely separate entertainment entity unto themselves. But, like all big businesses, the two inevitably combined during the great circus merger of 1919.
They created a super group, a circus group.
Exactly.
A super circus group.
Super.
Kind of like the Yardbirds.
Yes, exactly like the Yardbirds. Nice one.
Thank you.
Anybody, the kids aren't going to know, but it's
no,
fine.
No, no, no. Led Zeppelin, also.
Yeah.
Technically a super group.
Yeah, there's a lot of super groups out there. But yeah, Ringling Brothers, it was a super group of Ringling Brothers and Barnum and Bailey Circus. That's why that name is so fucking long, because it was two in one.
Yeah.
Now, and for the rest of this, I'm just going to call it Ringling Brothers. It's much easier.
Yeah.
Yeah, so Ringling Brothers was an entertainment powerhouse designed to fulfill the entertaining needs of the whole family. They had exotic animals, never before seen, that could perform the most amazing tricks as though they were tame as a family dog.
Like an elephant walking.
Yep, exactly.
And that's it. That's the whole trick.
Yeah. Hey, I mean, if you've never seen an elephant before and you saw it walking, you'd be like, that is...
And if elephant don't want to walk, maybe you hit it a few times.
And if it shits, have you ever seen an elephant shit?
Oh, yeah.
It's disgusting.
Maybe you hit it a few times.
It is a super feat unto itself.
They also have super feet.
Oh, actually.
They're very big.
The Ringling Brothers also had feats of what appeared to be superhuman strength and agility.
Oh, like a strongman?
Yeah, what, strongman and in the form of acrobatic daredevils.
Dick Grayson.
Yeah, pour one out for... No, he lived.
He's still alive.
It was Tim Drake.
Yeah, but he came back.
Yeah. That's all bullshit.
Sometimes they come back.
Sometimes they're better off dead. I think that's that wasn't...
We were both doing Stephen King, but you did a different thing, but then it got weird because you didn't do it quite right.
No.
And then you somehow did a Venture Brothers thing instead of a Judd.
Yeah, I was trying to do Judd. Yeah, sometimes Cheddar is better.
I don't want to go down that road.
Yeah.
You have to unhinge your jaw and glitch out.
What does the little kid say?
No fear.
No fear.
No fear.
No fear.
Speaking of which, back to the fair.
The circus was, in short, an all-encompassing spectacle of sight and sound. But one particular aspect that the circus could not live without, a supporting tent pole of the whole franchise, if you will.
See what you did there.
Thank you. Are the clowns.
Send
Every circus,
clown.
Big or small, has clowns. And in the early 1900s, Ringling Brothers just happened to have a clown by the name of Paul Wenzel.
That's his real name.
That's his real name. Yeah. Well, I don't know, though. There are
clowns. I'm Mr. Plaw.
Yeah, I'm Paul Wenzel. I'm a clown. But then again, like, Emmett Kelly was a famous clown. And
true.
Yeah, he was a sad clown.
Right.
So,
aren't they all?
I don't think it's out of
place. Just Paul Wenzel sounds like the name of your mailman.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, exactly. Paul. Now, just mentioning the name Paul Wenzel will most likely elicit the sounds of chirping crickets, because nobody knows who the fuck he is.
Nah.
Nowadays, at least, right? If you Google that name, Paul Wenzel...
I got shit to do.
You'll find an assortment of normcore dudes. Lawyers, pastors, doctors. There's even an artist by the name of Paul Wenzel.
Say normcore?
Yes.
What the fuck is that?
Just normal dudes.
Just say normal dudes. Is that a phrase you just came up with?
No, that's a real phrase.
No way.
It's a real phrase. Normcore. Have you heard of people who are normcore dudes? They shop at Walmart and get khakis and like pleated pants.
Why does everything have to have a title?
I didn't make it up.
I hate you for it.
It's not me. It's not me.
Like, I get like cottage core, like that's a thing.
No, no fear.
All right. All right.
Well, my point is,
Normcore guys drink Malort?
I don't know if Paul Wenzel would drink. No. Normcore guys do not drink Malort.
Okay.
Douchebags drink Malort. And here comes the hate mail.
Paul Wentz might drink Malort.
Paul Wenzel won't drink Malort.
No, but
Paul.
Wentz.
Wentz. Yeah, he totally would. Yeah. Fuck yeah, he would.
Cousin of George Wentz.
Yeah. But back to the Wenzel. There's a Paul Wenzel that I found online that does amazing Star Trek art.
Oh, this must seem you just Googling Paul Wenzel, yeah, and then you fell down a stupid rabbit hole about just, Star Trek.
There's a whole bunch of
he
Pauls
mocks
out
everything
there.
And he won't shut up about Star Wars.
Talking about Star Trek. God damn it. Fuck off. These are not the Pauls I am referring to. This is going to be a 5-hour episode.
These are not the Pauls you're referring
exactly,
to.
Exactly. Yeah.
See, I did it this
you
time.
You did it, yes. So who is Paul Wenzel and why would I even mention his name?
I don't know.
Well, I'm going to ask you. Is it because in 1965, Paul Wenzel was one of the first recipients of a pacemaker for his ill heart that was failing?
I mean, that's pretty cool.
No!
Oh, okay, sorry.
Nah.
I didn't know this.
Even though that was a medical miracle at its time, that's not why I'm mentioning Paul Wenzel, is it?
That's another episode.
That could be.
Yeah.
Now, you'll actually like this.
Okay.
Because you are the cinema nerd.
Yeah, yeah.
Is it because Paul Wenzel was the stunt double for Harold Lloyd in Ooh. One of the most famous silent films of all time?
Safety Last.
Safety Last.
I
yes,
am the
you
nerd.
Know it.
You're right.
While you might, well, you're not unfamiliar with it, but no. The listeners, if you are unfamiliar with that film, you are most likely familiar with its most famous scene. A man dangling precariously from a clock face that's situated on the side of a tall building.
Or you've seen that same clock face at the beginning of Back to the Future.
Yep. Yeah, 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 good one.
Thank you.
Harold Lloyd was unable to do the scenes that required him to hang from the clock face as it lurched from the wall.
Because he was missing fingers.
Was he?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, shit. Yeah. I just thought it because, you know, usually actors don't do the stunts.
Oh, yeah, no. He was into it.
Oh.
Yeah, he was just missing fingers.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Nice. Well, Paul Wenzel was the stunt double who did that scene. Which is great, because that's a little bit of cinema history. But that's not the reason why I'm talking about Paul.
I didn't even write that shit down. That's floating around up in my goddamn
said,
brain space.
You're the cinema
it's
nerd
fucked
of
up.
The show.
So which Paul is...
Well, the reason...
Will any Paul do?
Yes. Paul Wenzel, the reason I mention him is he actually is one of the most famous clowns in all of history. And without him, there's a good chance that Halloween might not be the spoopy holiday that it is today.
Oh, man. They should have called it Paul-oween.
Paul-oween? Wenzel-ween? I mean, who knows? Without Paul Wenzel, we might not even be recording the subject of this episode today.
That's true. We wouldn't even be recording a podcast.
No.
Or as they call it in this alternate timeline, a Paulcast.
A Paulcast. In the early 1900s, Paul Wenzel... God, this is like, if you thought his name was funny as a clown. Paul Wenzel was known as the famous producing clown.
What?
Yeah.
It's what do you mean producing?
Like, when I read it, I instantly thought of Carl from Aqua Teen. Like, hey, man, I'm going to go produce something in a little toilet bowl. You know?
Okay. But, sure. Content.
But, yeah. Thank you.
You do content into a toilet bowl.
You can produce content, yes, into a toilet bowl.
Yes.
Well, anyway, that name alone does sound pretty ridiculous until you become familiar with what Paul was capable of. You see, while other clowns, such as Teddy the Rough Rider and Marcel the French Tickler, were running around with floppy shoes, squeaking...
You can't! No, you can't come in here and say, we ain't doing any interruptions, we ain't doing no chit-chat, and then you just float past the French Tickler? As if I'm supposed to not do something?
I wanted to see if you would.
And motherfuckers like this Sean Stutler guy that I've heard about gets on me about interruptions? When you plant bait like that in front of me? That's bullshit.
I had to do it.
That's bullshit.
I had to do it.
I think that's gaslighting.
Sometimes it's funny.
All right.
Yeah, but okay. Teddy the Rough Rider. Marcel the French Tickler.
Yes.
Right? They were just running around with floppy shoes, squeaking their noses, and squirting water out of flowers. However, Paul Wenzel was fabricating and producing some of the most elaborate costumes and
you
props.
Dumb fucking French Tickler over there, why don't you shut up? I'm elaborately designing some costumes over here.
And he was doing it out of nothing more than piano wire and silk.
Ah, the Lon Chaney approach.
Mm-hmm. Now, the costumes that he made, they weren't limited to size or shape, so much so that he even made costumes for full-grown elephants, transforming them into chubby bumblebees and fairies. I don't know why it's not that funny.
No, it kind of is though. It? Because you ever seen, like, a fat dog wear a costume?
Oh, yeah, okay.
Just imagine that, but bigger.
A fat, an elephant dressed as a bumblebee is kind of funny.
It is pretty funny. Yeah. If you did a very bad job and it's just wings, you know, and right. A little stinger on the back. That's adorable.
It is.
I love that guy.
Is. Yeah. If you have the time, I do recommend Googling the name Paul Wenzel Clown.
Okay.
And that'll come up. And I think you'll be surprised at what you see and what he was capable of.
How long did it take you until you added clown to the end of the search?
It was pretty quick because I already knew going in.
All right. Gotcha.
I was looking for. There are photos of Paul with some of his costumes. And for example, there is one of Paul riding atop a large dragon. And as best I can tell, Paul is actually sitting on the top shoulders of a guy. And that guy is the one who is encased in the dragon costume. There's another photo where he's being led by a goose on a leash. It's a fake goose, not a real goose.
Oh, okay.
On a leash.
I was worried.
Well, the funny thing is he actually did have a real goose as part of his act, and his goose's name was Samson. Samson the Goose.
Love it.
It's great. Yeah, it's cute. You know? But in the goose photo, he's wearing impossibly oversized pants and shoes. And I mean, really oversized pants and shoes.
Like a picture of Kanye West.
I haven't seen the picture of Kanye West. I was thinking more like David Byrne.
Oh, sure.
Like, yeah.
Sure. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But of all of his talents, of all of his costumes and props, there was one in particular that people really were amazed with, and that was his homemade Popeye the Sailor mask. It was a mask that, unlike vacuum form masks, which only cover the front of the face, his Popeye mask covered his whole head. And for a character such as Popeye that sported an unconventional and distorted face, Paul's mask was apparently spot on to the cartoon sailor in resemblance and fabrication.
Hmm.
Now, sadly, there are no photographs of this mask, because this is like early 1900s.
Yeah.
Nobody had cell phones back then, so I was only able to read about the mask from firsthand accounts of people who saw it. This idea of an over-the-head mask intrigued a young man by the name of Don Post, who, according to legend, visited Ringling Brothers with the express purpose of meeting Paul Wenzel. Don wanted to see Paul's Popeye mask up close and to discuss with Paul his mask-making and prop-making techniques. As a result of this backstage meeting, Don Post was so inspired by what Paul Wenzel was doing that in 1938, he founded Don Post Studios with the express purpose of creating over-the-head masks. And that, my friends, is what we are going to be talking about today.
Yeah.
Don Post Studios.
Pretty much strictly Don Post Studios.
Strictly Don Post Studios, yes.
Strictly Dickly.
Strictly Dickly Don.
Cool. All right. Love it.
Right?
You're really, since you're only doing Don Post, you're really leaving a door open for many other companies.
Yes, I
which am. I appreciate.
Yes.
Because that tells me that you have confidence in this show.
I yes.
have nothing else to do.
Yeah. Next year we'll do another Halloween episode and focus on something else related to mask making and masks and all that.
Love it.
All that shit.
Yeah. Eventually we'll run through everything.
Now, it's usually at this point that I would cite my resources for the episode, but considering the journey that we're about to embark on, a journey that is over 11 pages, I'll save my sources till the end. Also, the sources kind of spoil some stuff, so I don't want to do that.
Cool.
So, let's get into it.
Yes.
Referred to by many as the godfather of Halloween, Don Post, at only 36 years old, founded his company, Don Post Studios,
in
1938. You're 36?
Yeah.
All right, that's cool.
I've done nothing with my life.
Hey, you've done something. You just bought a van.
That's true.
You did something.
Okay.
It's a nice van.
It's too. A start.
It's a start. It's a starter van.
No, I mean it's a start to the empire.
Okay. Yeah.
Start. You really kind of.
Starter van.
Yeah, you didn't really believe in me. I knew it.
I believe in you.
Thank you, bud.
I believe in you. I've always believed in you.
Thanks. You know what? I believe in you, too.
Thanks. Well, we believe in each other. Yeah. Yay. Yeah. That was confidence in my voice.
Yeah.
So in 38, he started. Actually, I've seen it listed as 1938, 1939, but I've seen 38 listed more, so I'm just going to go with that number.
Okay.
So, not that it matters, but there are a lot of the mask making community, there are some sticklers out there, so I just want to cover all bases.
Sure.
So he started selling his masks out of Marshall Fields in Chicago. Now, what is immediately interesting about this, and something that stands in stark contrast to the vacuum form companies mentioned in last year's episode, is that Don Post founded the company from the get-go with the sole purpose of making masks. The big three vacuum form companies that I mentioned, Ben Cooper, Halco, and Collegeville, did not start out catering to the costume whims of those who wanted to celebrate Halloween. If you remember, Cooper was a costume and wardrobe company that provided outfits for the Ziegfeld Follies as well as the Cotton Club. Collegeville was a flag manufacturer, and Halco, they made children's toys, specifically little cap guns for wannabe kid cowboys.
And bank robbers.
And bank robbers, yes, thank you. Equal opportunity.
Yes.
However, as a result of the Great Depression in 1929, all three of those companies had to make a drastic and sudden shift in product and vision to make ends meet. Halloween was really starting to take off around the 1930s, and that was a holiday that required products. So Cooper, Halco, and Collegeville, they transitioned relatively seamlessly to the production of inexpensive vacuum form masks. Whereas those three companies made the shift as a result of necessity, Don Post, he didn't care about producing a product to meet the needs of economic survival. He set out to make masks that were essentially collectible pieces of wearable artwork, essentially a true labor of monster love. Now, as for the masks that Don Post produced, they were a giant step, giant leaps over the vacuum form masks that were found in every five and dime store. You see, a vacuum form mask is a piece of molded plastic that hangs over the front of your face, and it's held in place by a thin piece of thread that wraps around the back of your head. And that thread was always going to break. Within minutes of wearing that mask, that thread was going to snap. And depending on the shape and size of your head and your face, the vacuum form mask, being that it's hard plastic, might not fit so well. Now, Don Post was the first person ever to produce an over-the-head, pull-on rubber mask. They didn't just cover your face, they covered your whole head. And being that they were made of molded rubber, they were far more flexible, comfortable, and far more detailed than any vacuum form mask could ever hope to be.
Rubber mask sounds like a villain in a Dick Tracy comic book.
It does, yes. Rubber mask! Now, one of the best descriptions of the Don Post over-the-head rubber mask actually comes from an early Don Post advertisement, most likely from the mid to late 40s. And this advertisement reads, quote, "These over-the-head, soft, pliable, latex masks afford perfect comfort. You can even talk, smoke, eat, or drink with your friends while wearing them. Ridiculously human, they laugh and grin with the wearer and create no end of amusement at parties." End quote.
You ever try to shove a piece of pizza into a over-the-head mask?
No, because I will not lose any amount of pizza. I love pizza so much that I cannot bear to lose any of it. I will not fuck with pizza.
Okay.
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 Maybe something else.
Yes, sir. Sorry, sir. Yeah. Quit yelling at me.
I'm sorry. One thing that I wanted to mention was, if you notice in the advertisement, it's not marketed towards kids.
No, it's marketed towards cool people who survived the war.
who smoke, eat, or drink.
Yeah.
So.
Which could be children, actually, in the 40s.
Yeah, it could very well actually be children. No, actually, it was meant for adults, but kids were smoking.
Most certainly.
Yeah. So, the construction of these over-the-head latex masks were truly the work of a fine artist. Now, if you're not familiar with how a Don Post mask was constructed, I'll break it down as simply as I can.
Ooh.
Yeah. The artist will first sculpt the character out of clay. It's in this stage of the creation that the details of the characters are essentially set in the clay, and there are no limitations as to how detailed a character can become. After the design is finalized, a mold is created of the sculpt using plaster. Liquid rubber is then poured into the mold, and after about 20 minutes, the liquid rubber is then poured out of the mold, leaving a layer of rubber inside that is left to dry. Once dry, the rubber mask is then pulled out of the mold and hand-painted. The mold is then reused over and over, producing rubber masks that are consistent in design and detail.
Yeah, I don't know if you got it in there, but if you want to see it in action, there's a sequence in Halloween 3 that shows that shit.
Yep.
Yeah.
I will mention that later.
Yeah.
Awesome. You're ahead of the game. You know what's going on.
I mean, yeah. Yeah. You live in that room.
Yeah. I live in a room that actually has the Halloween 3 masks, which are fun. When I go to bed at night and I turn the light off, yeah. they glow.
Yeah.
And it doesn't scare me.
No,
I like to think that they're watching over me, you know?
Has it ever like scared
angels?
You? Like maybe the first time you're like, oh, no.
No, because I knew they'd
glow. Oh, so spooky.
The only time I ever got scared by a glow-in-the-dark something was when my ex had bought a skull-shaped purse
yeah.
at a convention, and we didn't know that it glowed in the dark.
Yeah.
And then one night, turned the lights off, and it's like, oh, this is a skull face looking at me while I sleep. But it was actually pretty cool.
Yeah.
That was a fun discovery.
All right.
Now, as for what masks Don was producing in those early years, the designs were quite simple and generic, consisting of such characters as the Beggar Man, who most likely says things like Alabama. Put that Beggar Man on, you're just going to run around and go, Alabama. The Glamour Girl. The Tramp Clown. I like the Tramp Clown. I don't know why. It's just like a trampy clown. You know he's out there having sex with a tramp.
No, it's a different kind of tramp.
Okay.
No, it's like a Charlie Chaplin.
Oh, okay. Tramp, yeah, I got trampy sex on the
yeah,
mind.
Not...
another one. The Cubby Bear, which is just a bear.
Okay.
This is a generic bear.
I've met a few generic bears in my day.
Yeah. The Mystery Guest, which I... It's just a mask of a dude's face.
Most of these sound like they could be sex acts. Or the names of fun novelty dildos.
Sure. This next one, though.
Come on.
Maybe not. The next one is, Mrs. Fagan.
No, that could definitely
be. You think so?
Oh, yes.
I assume, Mrs. If you buy the Mrs. Fagan mask, it comes with a box of Werther's, Brian. Would you like a hard candy?
There's people that are into that.
It's peppermint. That's true. There are.
Yeah.
People love that old Mrs.
Gilfs
Fagan.
Gilfs is what they call them.
What?
Gilfs.
And you're giving me shit for normcore? Gilfs? I knew about MILFs. I didn't know about Gilfs. Wow.
Yeah.
I got to get me an old Mrs. Fagan mask.
You do.
Oh, yes, wow. Mrs. Fagan.
You already got the Werther's.
I love the Werther's, man. That's a legit love for me. Now, of those early masks, these are my personal favorites because...
Oh, boy.
He also did some that were called The Dictators. That's right, my friends. Don Post produced a line of over-the-head masks of Hitler, Stalin, and Mussolini, the dry dictators. It's essentially the fascist Powerpuff Girls. the weird thing is so these were made in the 40s, late 40s.
Yeah.
They were some of the most popular masks that were bought. Were the dictators, because everybody wanted to be Hitler. You go to a party, I'm just going to dress as Hitler. Who's this so much fun? Hitler's a fun guy, you know?
Yeah, Hitler likes to party.
He loves dogs.
He does love dogs.
He did love dogs.
Yeah.
But fuck him still. So it's kind of weird. Like, you could Google it. There are images of those masks.
But it's also like, every year you see, you know, like, political masks at, like, Spirit Halloween.
Yes, you
but
do.
But also, like, who the fuck is just like, you know what? I'm going to be Joe Biden this year. That's boring as shit.
I don't know.
Who does that?
But there's like...
If you do that right into this podcast...
Hitler has become a taboo in so much that like, you can't go to Spirit Halloween and say, do you have the Hitler, you know? Can I...
Yeah, I think if you said it like that, they'd probably be like, oh, this guy's funny. He gets it. He's not going to do weird, racially insensitive stuff. He's in it for the comedy.
Yeah, exactly. Okay.
If you want to get it on the sly, though, you just ask for a chaplain.
Oh, yeah.
And then, you know, no one will know.
It's true. Yeah. I still think the chaplain should come back. The chaplain mustache. He did it. Jordan did it. Yeah.
Why can't you?
I could at this point because my stash is thick enough. It's got volume.
Oh.
I wasn't going to say viscous. But my stash has volume.
Would you say it's thick and voluminous?
Thick. Yeah, I have to say that. Mustache is thick. Yeah. Voluminous.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, no. No, we're not going to do that. But now, those early masks, as for the cost of those masks,
ooh,
they were around...
We're in the 40s.
In the 40s, they cost $2.25.
Jesus Christ.
Exactly, which actually it's not too bad. Adjusted for inflation ends up being around $42 today. So not that much.
Those guys?
Who are you pointing to?
Them Halloween 3 masks?
Okay, yeah.
$60 a pop.
Yeah. I mean, you've been to Spirit. They have some cheap rubber masks that probably are still around 40th.
Right. Yeah, you're right. Well, yeah. No, you're right.
Yeah. So it's not that bad. It's, I think, kind of on par with today's average generic mask that you'd buy. Now, we're going to jump ahead a little bit. In the year 1948, that was a turning point for Don Post Studios. Because this was the year that everything changed, not just for Don, but for all of us monster lovers as well.
Mm.
In 1948, Don Post went to Universal Studios, not the amusement park, I have to clarify, because I know there's going to be people out there be like, yeah, I've been to Universal. They've got some great rides out there, man. That's where the Harry Potter rides out there, right?
Yeah.
I don't know, whatever.
I don't think that was around in 48.
No, but for the young kids.
No, I know.
For the young kids, the actual movie studio. While there, Don Post made a deal with Universal that granted him the license to produce the very first official Frankenstein mask.
Cool.
Prior to this, there were no official Universal monster masks available to the public.
Hmm.
Now, what may surprise you is that it was not a rubber mask of Boris Karloff. Now, while Karloff may have been the originator of the man-made monster in the 1931 film Frankenstein, in 1948, one of the most popular and successful films at that time was... Do you want to guess? I know it's one of your favorites.
Oh, where were we at?
1948.
48.
Frankenstein related.
Yeah.
It's fun. It's a fun film.
It's a fun film. Abbott and Costello meets Frankenstein?
Abbott and Costello meet Frankenstein. In that film, the character of the man-made monster was portrayed by actor Glenn Strange.
Yeah.
Who had also acted as the monster in two prior films. So this first official Don Post Frankenstein mask was of the Glenn Strange likeness. And in my opinion, I personally think it's the better choice. Now don't get me wrong, Karloff is the classic, no doubt about it. But Glenn Strange had a face that had a lot of city miles on it, if you know what I mean. And I think you do.
Why'd you wink at me?
I mean, basically, if you've seen Glenn Strange, I mean, his face was well-suited for representation in the form of a molded rubber monster mask.
Yeah, what you're saying is this guy looked naturally like a monster.
Yes, he did. Which, he looked awesome, you know? And I think, if I remember, Glenn Strange started out acting in Westerns because he had a very rough and tumble face.
Sure.
So it was just, he transitioned easily into playing the Frankenstein's monster.
Quit being a fucking asshole about it. Just call him Frankenstein.
All right, thank you. Thank you. If you're cool with it, yeah, I'll go that route because I hate saying it.
Dr. Frankenstein made the guy in his image as if a god, thus making him...
Yes.
Frankenstein.
Thank you.
Furthermore, there's a film called Son of Frankenstein.
Yes.
To which he makes a monster,
uh-huh,
once again in his image.
Yep.
Frankenstein.
I've got no issues with it. It's just, there's always some...
There's contrarian assholes.
Thank you.
That just gotta buck the trend.
I know.
These people are dickheads, and they don't really find joy in anything. They just want to be contrarians.
I'm glad we're on the same page.
Abort Malort.
Thank you. That's what this episode is really about, friend. Now, the relationship between Don Post and the film industry continued to grow as a result of his talents and abilities. He began making masks and props for various film and TV shows such as Alfred Hitchcock Presents, The Tennessee Ernie Show, The Dinah Shore Show, the film Pork Chop Hill, which starred Gregory Peck.
That's your Gregory Peck?
Yeah.
The fuck was that?
I don't know. I can't do Gregory Peck. Gregory Peck. How would you do Gregory Peck?
I'm not going to, because I don't have one.
Gregory. Gregory Peck. And one of my other... this one is one of my favorites. Mm. Don posted work on the original 1956 science fiction horror film, Invasion of the Body Snatchers.
Oh, yeah.
That film fucking rules.
Yeah, it's good stuff.
And the remake in the 70s remake also is rules as well. I watched it recently. It holds up.
I think it's better. I think it's the best version.
It's got a young Jeff Goldblum.
See, that I can do.
Thank you. Now, for Invasion of the Body Snatchers, Don Post fabricated the pods. He created the disgusting in-progress bodies that were within the pods, as well as the finished and duplicated bodies that came out of the pods. Basically, everything disgusting in that movie that looked cool.
Everything pod-related.
Yeah, he made.
Okay.
It's really cool, you know? I mean, it is, yeah. You know, it's Halloween. If you're out there listening and you've never seen the original Invasion of the Body Snatchers, watch it. It's good. It holds up.
Yeah, quit being a fucking asshole.
Also, if you can find the original ending, even better, because it did not end on a good note. They had to change it because it freaked, the original ending freaked people out because it didn't end well. And so they had to make it a happy ending for people. So there is an original ending that's a downer.
Which version I've seen then?
How did it end for you?
I think it just ends with him screaming into the camera.
Yeah, that's the original ending. They added a scene where he then goes into a police station and then they're like, "Yeah, we'll take care of it. We'll kill all the pods." That's not exactly what they said, but it was something.
Oh yeah, like, sure.
Everyone's gonna kill him. We trust you. We're just gonna shoot all the pod people. It's fine. Go back to your job. It's fine. Yep.
Roll credits.
Yep.
So the main character's like shrugging, like, okay.
Now, in the early 1960s, things were about to get even better for Donpo Studios. But before I get to that chapter, I need to briefly talk about a man by the name of Vern Langdon.
Hey, Vern. Sorry, I watched a lot of Ernest stuff recently.
I know you did. Hey, man, I live here.
Yeah,
I
you knew it was going to happen. You knew you would say Vern, and I would just do that.
And that's cool because
I've become predictable.
You still light my fire. It's good.
Don't say things like that. Hey, baby, it's cool. You still light my fire. What the fuck? All right, get back in the 60s.
I told you, everybody in this neighborhood, they already think we're gay. It's fine.
No, they already think you're gay. They know I'm gay.
You just came home driving a Nissan van, and you didn't unload anything from it. It doesn't look like a work van. It's very clean. It's in pristine condition. You came home driving a Nissan.
I think it...
We have, in this driveway, a Nissan.
Yeah.
A Honda Fit.
Yeah, which is kind of gay.
And a Mazda CX-5.
Yeah, that's like something that a middle-aged woman drives.
And I drive like a middle-aged woman.
That's actually pretty true.
Yeah.
But not a nurse, because they're the worst drivers.
I gotta get back into it.
Yes, please.
I'm gonna keep laughing. Last night when I was typing the script, at one point I made a joke to myself in the bedroom.
And just laughed yourself to sleep.
I started laughing to the point where I was crying. And I was trying to be quiet because I was embarrassed. I didn't want you to hear me to myself.
Please.
Because I was literally crying in my bedroom.
I can't wait till we get to it.
I don't even remember what the joke was now at this point.
You'll remember when you get there.
All right, then, all right. We need to talk about Vern Langdon.
Vern, yeah.
Vern. In reading about Vern, we actually could do an entire episode just devoted to him, but I'll sum up Vern as best I can. He was a magician, a musician who put out albums, a clown, a wrestler, and a monster-loving mask maker. Hmm. Vern's father...
This is almost the Joker. The Steve Miller song. Sorry, not...
Yeah, no, okay.
Not the Batman villain.
Yeah. That's fine. And I just bought my Steve Miller shirt the other
day.
Yeah, nice.
Yeah.
It's like poetry.
Hoo, hoo, hoo.
Do it. What? Wow. It kind of sounds like R2-D2 also. I want to hear that Steve Miller song and substitute R2-D2's yell, his little bleep that he does in that song now. All right. Vern's father was a dentist, so Vern had access to sculpting and mold-making materials.
Yes.
Courtesy of his father's dentistry practice. Now, as a result of having free range to explore what he could do with these materials, Vern honed his craft pretty early, not only attracting the attention of Don Post, but becoming pen pals with him as well. The ongoing and mutually admiring relationship paid off when in 1963, Don Post Studios joined forces with Vern Langdon and a new era of mask making was about to begin.
Ooh.
Hell yeah.
Very exciting.
Hell yeah. Now, one of the first projects that Langdon and Post worked on was a new line of monster masks called Hollywood Horrors. Introduced in 1963, this new line of masks upped the ante of officially licensed Universal characters, as this new series had masks of Dracula, Frankenstein.
Thank you.
You're welcome. The Wolfman, The Mummy, Mr. Hyde, and even the classic Lon Chaney-inspired Phantom of the Opera.
Okay. No creature.
Not yet. Compared to the $2.25 Hitler mask of the early years, these masks were a step up in design and price.
You could have picked any mask, but you chose Hitler.
I did. Because, you know, he's a great time at parties, you know?
Yeah. You could have said, I don't know, whatever their fucking names were earlier.
Oh, Beggar Man?
You could have said Alabama Man. But you went with Hitler.
Old Mrs. Fagan.
Yeah.
She liked to fuck Mrs. Fagan. As you pointed out, those early masks, they all sound like sex acts.
Yeah.
Yeah. Fagan fucks.
Fagan definitely fucks. Yeah.
So, now, compared to that $2.25 mask of those early years, these were a step up in design and price. They were sold for a whopping $25.
Damn!
Hell yeah. Adjusted for inflation, that would be about $240 today.
God damn.
Exactly.
Would you spend that money?
I probably would. Because, again, these weren't marketed towards kids. And the increase in price was actually justified by a few factors. The masks were not... They weren't meant to be dime store rubber masks.
Came with life insurance.
Yeah. They were professional masks that could be used in a professional setting. Like haunted houses. Haunted houses were a big thing.
You're right. My brain was like... I don't know.
Like an insurance office?
Yeah, or like a taxi driver.
That'd be pretty fucking cool.
A boat captain.
Oh my god, I would love to ride in a boat. Some guy dresses Dracula. That'd be great. Now, they also had, get this, a zippered back closure.
Oh.
For easy on and off.
Yeah, for your hair to get stuck in.
Exactly. Ugh. Well, also back then, you know, most people, guys weren't douchebags like I used to be. They have short hair like I do now, so.
Yeah. So you're saying you're not a douchebag anymore?
Not anymore. I'm a normcore kind of guy. I bought a Steve Mueller shirt the other day.
That makes you aggressively normcore.
With this mustache?
Yeah.
All right.
You bought it at Walmart, too.
I did. It was on sale. So they had a zippered back. They were all hand-painted. And like the Phantom of the Opera and the Wolfman mask, they had actual hair.
Hand-frocked.
I don't think they were frocked. I think they were glued on in segments.
Oh, okay. Yeah,
but,
yeah.
But it looked good. It didn't look like a doll's head, you know, of hair.
The blackest eyes are doll's eyes.
And each mask also had an extended sculpt of the neck to allow for an even greater amount of realism.
Cowl.
Sure, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I am sad to say, however, that due to the instability of the latex that was used at that time for that particular line of masks, none are in existence today, as they have all degraded, crumbled, and fallen apart.
$200. Down the drain.
All except one.
Ooh!
There is only one known copy of the Dracula mask that has survived the ravages of time.
Well, he's immortal.
It's true. As long as you don't put him in the sunlight. Which, actually...
You shouldn't do
with
masks.
You shouldn't do with a rubber mask. Anyway. Yeah. Don't keep it in direct sunlight. Yeah. Yeah. Shortly after Vern Langdon and Don Post joined forces, sculptress extraordinaire Pat Newman joined the fold, and we basically had a holy trinity of monster mask makers.
Nice.
Hell yeah.
Can't wait till we get another guy in there.
There were a few that joined.
Get the four horsemen.
I honestly, I looked over. You were holding your hand up.
Yeah, sorry, that's the... No, it's not an Italian thing, it's a wrestling thing.
I thought you were going to do the two in the pink, one in the stink.
No. It's,
okay.
It's, it's Arn Anderson, you don't need to know.
Yeah, okay.
It's Ric Flair.
I'm still learning.
You'll figure it out.
I'm still learning.
So, Universal Studios was so pleased with the sculpted lineup of Hollywood horrors. Now, remember, at this time, they hadn't degraded and fallen apart. That would happen a few years later.
Sure.
That they encouraged Don Post Studios to expand upon the line. So, 1 year later, 1964, Hollywood Horrors became the all-new Universal Horrors. And being that this was an all-new lineup of masks, meant that it required all new sculpted versions of the classic monsters.
Oh, okay. Yep.
So within a year, we've got brand new versions.
Yeah.
The Frankenstein's monster was created for the lineup again.
All right.
Also, a new version of Glenn Strange.
Oh.
But what's interesting about this sculpt is that it was taken from the actual life cast of Glenn Strange's face that was used as a prop in the fiery climax of Abbott and Costello Meet Frankenstein. So, as a result, you essentially had a movie-accurate mask of Glenn Strange. Now, however, there was an immediate problem with the Glenn Strange mask. It was too small, and it didn't fit anybody that had a bald head.
No fear.
No fear. That bald head, that too big for that mask.
Yeah.
So the Glenn Strange Frankenstein was re-sculpted, this time by sculptress Pat Newman, at a larger scale to accommodate the bottom heads.
Yeah, yeah.
And the second version of Glenn Strange, the Pat Newman sculpt, is considered to be the quintessential Don Post Frankenstein mask. Hmm. It's the mask that's been featured on magazine covers. It's the mask that's featured in all the cool Don Post ads. If you Google Don Post Frankenstein mask, you're going to get the Glenn Strange. And when you do, it is the version that Pat Newman sculpted. And it's honestly one of my favorite masks. Matter of fact, one of my best-selling spray-painted heads is the Glenn Strange Frankenstein.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Now, as I mentioned, the Universal Horrors line of rubber monster masks expanded upon the previous line of Hollywood horrors. Not just in new sculpts, but with a few new characters as well. In total, the Universal Horrors line... Horrors. I fucking can't say it.
Four-year-old
horrors.
No. No.
No?
No.
Okay. It featured 10 characters.
Oh.
Yes.
Wow.
So these masks, this lineup consisted of Dracula, Frankenstein, the Gill Man.
Hell yeah.
Finally got the Gill Man.
Love that guy.
The Wolf Man, the Mummy, the Phantom of the Opera, the Mole Man. Also a very cool design.
Nice.
The evil mad Dr. Neiman from the film House of Frankenstein.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
The evil Mr. Hyde. And finally... the bell ringer himself, Quasimodo.
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 All right, that's cool.
Yeah, it was really cool. I mean, that's a lot.
Yeah.
Now, this all-new lineup of rubber monster masks was the ultimate monster lover's dream. And as it is with all dreams that come true, they ain't cheap.
Oh.
No, they not.
No.
The cost of these masks back in 1964, according to one of those old ads that I found... $37.50.
Wow.
Which, adjusted for inflation, ends up being around $360 today.
That's a car payment.
Yeah.
That's a car payment right there.
And you know what? I did Horror Hound recently, Mask Fest.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of those masks around this price range. But again, the people that are buying it are hardcore collectors.
Yes, and also some of those you're not getting as more mass quantities as you would with a Don Post, you know?
And then also a lot of those masks around that price range, a lot of them, you don't really want to wear it. They're just for display in a glass case.
You'll want to wear it.
You want to.
But you can't.
Realistically,
you shouldn't.
You shouldn't, exactly.
Because you bowl them head.
That's right. Now, these masks, the Universal Horrors, these were not the disposable rubber masks meant for kids, obviously, by that price.
That kid would be pretty fucking cool, though.
Oh, man, the only kids that could afford that were rich kids, man.
Yeah.
These were meant for collectors. They were essentially wearable art, although you wouldn't want to wear it. And this specific lineup, the Universal Horrors, ended up being some of Don Post's most famous masks of all time.
Yeah.
Now, taking that price tag into account, I'm sure you can see that there is a problem. These masks were heavily advertised in the back pages of Famous Monsters of Filmland. Yet the very audience, the demographic that the magazine was intended for,
could not afford these masks. So how is it that they stood the test of time? How is it that, unlike other unobtainable and overpriced items that eventually fade away into obscurity, the Universal Horrors line of masks are legendary? Well, the answer to that question has to do with something that Vern Langdon jokingly said to a visiting publisher.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. Jim Matthews was a publisher who was visiting the Don Post Studios. He was hanging out with Vern Langdon in his office, who happened to have 11 by 14 inch color photographs of the 10 aforementioned characters from the Universal Horrors. Now, these were extremely nice and detailed photographs, and they were meant to be used for advertising purposes. Jim Matthews loved these framed photos so much that he kept prodding Langdon by saying that he would really love to do something with those photos. And Langdon jokingly said, "Well, if you love them so much, why don't you just make a calendar out of them?"
Oh.
Well, being that Jim Matthews was a publisher, that is exactly what he set out to do.
Oh.
Now, if you remember, there were only 10 characters in the Universal Horrors lineup. Not enough for a full calendar, so it was decided that two more masks...
We had two more months. We made up two more months.
Exactly. And that's why we've got 12 months in a calendar.
Yeah.
Exactly. It's because of Don Post.
Yeah.
So we decide... We, as if I'm a part of the company.
You and I.
You and I. Yeah, exactly. We decided that two more masks would be made and photographed, thereby fulfilling...
Guessing?
All the needed photos.
Maybe a bride of Frankenstein?
No.
No?
No.
Wow.
No bride.
Women. They weren't accepted in society yet.
You might not be far off from that, actually. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. What were they?
One of those additional characters that was added was the Metaluna Mutant, one of the most iconic alien designs ever put to film.
This island Earth?
Yep, exactly. Featured in the movie. This island Earth.
Also designed by Millicent Patrick, who did The Creature.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Shout out to Millicent Patrick. I was going to say, can I get a yub? No, but she's passed on. But yes, you did a kiss to the sky.
I did a kiss to the sky. They couldn't see it.
I know. I saw it.
Yeah, sorry.
Now,
you looked me in the eye the whole time I did it. It was really weird.
I look you in the eye anytime you do anything slightly weird or not intentionally sexual.
Hey, who was the other character?
Well, actually, I got to talk about the Metaluna Mutant.
Oh, please.
Yeah. If you're not familiar, it's essentially a bug-eyed alien with an oversized exposed brain.
Yeah, like some dang-ass freak-looking Forlom motherfucker.
Yeah. Now, the mask of this alien that was created for the calendar shoot was made from the actual movie mold.
Mm.
So just like the Glenn Strange mask that I mentioned earlier, the Metaluna Mutant mask that was featured in the calendar was movie accurate in size, looks, and detail. If you've seen the movie, that is a fucking Bullum head.
It really is.
That is the very definition of a Bullum
head. Hey, how do you have such a hard time saying Universal Horror, but you can say Metaluna Mutant like it's fucking nothing?
I don't know. Well, remember that the last episode, I was like, Abenaki. You're like, no problem.
You're still doing it.
I know.
That's weird.
I don't know.
You're a freak.
Thank you.
Yeah, no problem.
Now, however... This mask, the mutant mask, was only created for the purpose of the calendar and not meant to be a mask available to the public.
Mm.
Nevertheless, the design of the Metaluna Mutant was so unique and unlike any other mask available at that time that people really wanted to buy one. So it was decided to resculpt the mutant as a smaller mask that could be bought and worn by any collector who was willing to shell out the cash.
Are you saying there was a Metaluna Mutiny?
Yes.
Okay.
Nice. Very nice.
Thank you.
And finally, the last mask needed for the calendar was that of a gorilla.
What? Fuck off. Fuck off.
Unlike the Metaluna Mutant mask, which eventually became available to the public, this gorilla mask was not available to the public. Well...
Yeah, no one wants that shit.
I will say this. It was only available to the public as a complete set, meaning if you wanted to buy the gorilla mask, you also had to buy the entire gorilla outfit. Don Post produced a gorilla outfit.
Yeah, of course he did that.
It wasn't really meant for the public, though. It was an outfit meant for movie studios, television studios.
Right, right.
So it was actually a very cool mask looking at it. It was highly detailed.
Yeah.
There was no way they could produce it, mass produce it with the hair, with the sculpt, the size. So you could only buy that mask if you bought the whole outfit. I couldn't find a price.
Yeah.
I'm guessing that it would have been thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars if it was meant for TV and film.
What year would this have been?
This is 1964 this lineup. Well, the Universal Horrors lineup came out in 64. We're getting to the date of the calendar. In 1966, the Don Post Monster Mask calendar was finally released. For just under $1, any kid could buy a 12-month calendar featuring 12 full-color, highly detailed photos that just so happened to be the exact same size as the actual masks. So it didn't matter that you couldn't afford the $37 mask, because you could get the next best thing, and kids did. The calendar was so popular and became so synonymous with the masks that were featured in its pages that the Universal Horrors lineup of masks were now and forever known as the calendar masks. If you Google calendar masks, that's what you'll find.
Yeah.
It's very easy to find these masks. So it's kind of funny looking back that something so simple and almost kitschy in a way, a calendar of all things, was really the one little thing that cemented this lineup of Don Post masks into the history of monsters and everything that is Halloween.
That is interesting.
Yep.
I asked about the time frame, because are you familiar with the John Landis film Schlock?
Mm-hmm.
Released in, 1973? So 10 years later?
Yeah.
Features a gorilla run amok.
Yeah.
Played by Rick Baker, who, as we all know, is a makeup effects person.
He's done a few things.
He's a fucking nerd.
Yeah.
And I bet, I don't have that in front of me because I just Googled, I'm Wikipediaing it right now, but I bet if he had the opportunity to spend someone else's money to get a Don Post full gorilla outfit, I think that's what he fucking did.
Yeah.
I have a feeling that might be the Don Post.
I think you might be right. When I was reading about the gorilla mask, I didn't write it down, but it listed all the various things that the Don Post gorilla mask had been used in movies.
Yeah.
So,
just throwing it out there, just speculating.
If there's any listeners out there that know the answer to that, is the gorilla mask in Schlock, is that a Don Post mask? Let us know.
Yeah.
Write in. Call us. Yeah, don't call us.
We don't have a number.
Nope. Now, we're going to jump into the 1970s, and honestly, I don't have much to say about the 70s. I will say this, that Don Post sadly passed away in 1979. Sorry. At which point, Don Jr. took over for the company. But overall, the 1970s were an amazing time. Not just for the Don Post studios, but for all mask makers. Mask makers such as Ben Cooper in Collegeville.
Yes.
This was largely due to the ever-increasing popularity of the summertime blockbuster like Jaws, Aliens, and the cultural phenomenon known as Star Wars. When Halloween rolled around, everybody wanted to dress as one of these iconic movie characters, or at the very least, a knockoff of those characters, and there were plenty of masks to go around. Business was booming, as they say. But something else happened in the 1970s, and although it's unrelated to monster masks specifically, it was definitely responsible for helping to create the Halloween aesthetic that we love, an aesthetic that still continues to this day.
You know, monster masks are monster appropriation in my mind. A real problem that pops up around this time of year.
Wait.
No,
I'm
hold on. This
you.
Is my fucking in.
Okay. All right.
Homer Simpson himself has pretended to be King Kong. Your good friend Tracy Morgan is dressed as a werewolf. Mm-hmm. Even the great Fred Gwynn has been guilty of Frankenface. There it is. I was hoping you would have a beverage in your mouth when I did that. Yeah. And it doesn't stop with Famos. It's invaded our daily lives. Our children have been guilty of this atrocity.
What?
And do you know who I blame?
Oh, God, who?
The sugary cereals.
No!
General Mills.
No!
Nabisco.
What?
Those people that make the bagged ones.
Nabisco?
It's Malt-O-Meal. I know who makes the bagged ones.
I know.
Even, I didn't even write
I've
that
I've had
shit
plenty
down.
Of Malt-O-Meal back yeah, in my
it's
day.
It's pretty good, actually.
It is, actually, yeah. Like a good bag.
I present to you all the story of the Monster Cereals. A tale rife with controversy, shock, and intrigue.
Big words.
I pretty much just matched kind of the way you do intros. Anywho, what were you going to say, though? Coming in here.
I mean, we just had a conversation prior to recording this about appropriation.
Yeah.
As long as it's done with, you know, love and respect, it's fine. And here you're talking about monster mask appropriation?
There ain't no respect to not putting a Brad Frankenstein mask out there.
Yeah. Come on. You're not wrong, Walter.
With shows like The Addams Family and The Munsters being broadcast, that's right, The Munsters.
Monsters.
Yes, The Munsters being broadcast into our homes, and Hammer's revival of the classic Universal films flickering across the silver screen. The time was perfect. Oddly, in March of 71, General Mills released the progenitor of the sugar-laden spooks, Count Chocula and Frankenberry.
Oh, man. Just the two?
Yeah, just the two. You weren't going to get on me about using the phrase progenitor?
No, because I like that. It's good.
It makes
this,
right?
I always said this is not a Ken Burns podcast, but that bumps it up a few notches.
Daddy found a thesaurus, baby.
Don't say it like that.
Two iconic cereals that were very similar in makeup. Puff corn with Marbit marshmallows marketed to be milk flavor changing chocolate and strawberry, respectively.
Mm.
Although very early on in its conception, Frankenberry was a hit with a complaint. Any ideas?
Complaining about marshmallow goodness? Frankenberry? Is it because he was pink? He was pink, right?
You see how I did this? I wrote this exactly the way you did. I threw in questions for you to get involved. No, it is the dye that was used, and the cereal was a rosy pink, and parents were discovering red streaks in their children's shits, thinking it was causing internal hemorrhaging. Many wrote to General Mills.
No shit.
Actually, too much shit. yeah, the red dye could not be digested.
What?
I believe it was Red 5, which is also
Cut
a Star
chatter,
Wars.
Cut the chatter, Red 5. God
call
damn
sign.
It.
Yeah, the it was like, I don't know, one kid in particular, they took in and, you know, doctor looked at him and then monitor him, found out that he was eating these Frankenberry cereals, and then they give him a diet of only Frankenberry to be like, oh, okay, that's what it is.
Wow.
Could you imagine that week where you're only eating Frankenberry? Fuck yeah.
I mean, it sounds pretty good.
That kid was in heaven. Despite the now infamous Frankenberry stool, as it was called in the medical community.
No.
That's actually true.
Are you serious?
Yes. The company saw profits and decided not to fucking change it.
What?
Yeah. The company saw profits due to its clever marketing campaign, which saw the two monsters tongue-in-cheek battling for which cereal was the best.
Oh, okay.
And then they would, you know, run away in fear when a child showed up and picked a cereal. They were scaredy cats.
Two monsters, one bowl.
Yeah. What?
Nothing.
In 1973, the line expanded to Booberry, a Peter Lorre-inspired blueberry ghost.
Yes.
And in 74, Fruit Brute, spelled F-R-U-I-T-B-R-U-T-E.
Brute!
Yes, a multi-fruit flavored werewolf with lime flavored marshmallows. Fun fact, Booberry is the first ever blueberry flavored cereal.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh.
Took until 73 for someone to be like, what about blueberries?
That's weird. That's kind of late in the cereal game.
Right? Pretty Pretty weird. And around this time, the commercials changed. You know, the monsters were cowardly, but Fruit Brute was big, yeah, strong, yeah, and brave.
He was all broody.
Yeah. Seen as a failure, though, Fruit Brute lasted 8 years on the shelves and was resurrected as Yummy Mummy in 1987.
Huh.
Which also got canned in 92.
Yeah, the weird thing is, I don't remember Yummy Mummy.
You don't remember Fruity Yummy a Mummy?
No, I don't.
It's a good design.
I was doing drugs.
He's like fruit stripe wrapped mummy bandages. What kind of drugs?
Fruit stripes? What?
Hold on, what kind of drugs?
No, I was just kidding. I didn't do drugs.
Oh.
I was a good boy.
Yeah, that's true. Good Christian boy.
Yeah.
Actually, back good, then you were.
I was a good boy looking for a bad toy.
Well.
That's a BG Sunfire song.
Yeah, no, I was... Okay. You could find good toys in these cereal boxes, actually.
Oh, yeah. That was one of the reasons to eat the cereal was the actual toy.
Yes. After 40 years of continuous productions, games, and lore, the line was discontinued in 2010. I think many Monster Kids mourned this loss.
Yeah, that was bullshit.
40 years of animated, scared, sugary monsters being terrorized by children, fiending for cereal and iconic commercials. General Mills, thankfully, have been releasing the cereal seasonally for Halloween since 2010. It's the way I know spooky season is upon us. It's usually the first Halloween products I see on shelves. It's been pretty exciting to see what General Mills does with the monsters every year. In the 80s, they had pack-in toys, bigger marshmallows, posters, vinyl singles.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You remember those? I think there were like three or four of them.
Yeah.
The boxes were constantly changing, and for its 10-year celebration, the line featured homage art. The monsters met their universal counterparts.
Oh, wow.
Do you remember these?
I don't. I'll have to Google it. Yeah.
They were very nice, like, almost colored pencil designs of the universal monsters, and then the, like, cel-shaded animated characters, like, running away in fear.
No shit.
Yeah. Of just Count Chocula and Frankenberry. And there's nothing really for Boo Berry to do.
Sure.
Because ghosts aren't real.
Yes, they are.
But, once again, controversy rears its head. Count Chocula this time was met with it. The beautiful art of Bela Lugosi was adorned with an amulet that closely resembled the Star of David.
Okay. And is this the... What year is this? Do you know?
This was the 10-year celebration, so like 81.
81, 82?
81, okay. 82, yeah. The box was quickly pulled. It's become a collector's item over the years, selling from anywhere from $50 to $200.
Oh, wow.
Some of the favorite lines that I remember over the years were in the 90s, the Howlin' Marshmallow Hollow Foils that had new marshmallows that were wolves howling at the moon.
Oh, wow.
And the boxes had like a hollow foil design, like a 90s comic book.
Very nice.
Good shit. Speaking of comics, DC Comics artists drew covers for them in 2014.
Wow.
Jim Lee, Terry Dodson did some rebranding. For the 50th anniversary, two flavors and a handful of new products came back. The Fruit Brute and the Yummy Mummy.
Yeah.
And Boo Berry. And they did a remix kind of thing where they threw all the flavors together called the Monster Mash.
Yeah.
In 2023, this very year, the line added a new character.
I've seen it.
Carmella Creeper.
Yeah.
A zombie DJ, which is stupid as shit.
Yeah.
But it's caramel apple flavor, and I'm into that.
It's still spooky. It's fine.
I haven't had it yet.
I saw it, yeah, when I was shopping at Meijer. I was like, hey, look at that.
Yeah.
Just look at it.
I imagined you stopped and just pointed.
I did. Like, I do that a lot. I do that when I point at pizza when I buy myself.
Yeah, that is true.
Point at the Tasty Cakes now.
Yeah, you love those guys.
Love a good Chocolate Junior.
Just let Chocolate Junior breathe.
It's the name of the actual cake, man.
It is the name of the actual cake. It sounds like what I would name a horse in Red Dead Redemption.
Ah, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. The General Mills monster cereals have a surprisingly rich history, marred with its fair share of missteps.
Wow.
But a continued growth, and in a sea of, I don't know, copy and paste cereals and styles and shit on our shelves, the cereals here manage to evolve, remain playful, artistically inviting, and seeing them in the store is always a good welcome.
Yeah.
Who's your favorite character?
You know, I'd have to go with either Count Chocula or Booberry.
What's your preferred to eat, though?
Count Chocula. Chocula. Yeah. I mean, my favorite cereal of all time is Cap'n Crunch. I love peanut butter. That's why. But other cereal-wise, I like a good chocolate flavor.
Okay.
So I like Count Chocula. But character-wise, Count Chocula and Booberry. And I actually had a cereal question for you. Yeah. What's yours, though? What's your favorite?
Frankenberry and Booberry.
Okay. You just like berries.
I don't like chocolate.
You a berry boy?
Yeah.
You a very berry boy?
I ate a lot of strawberries yesterday. Okay. I ate so many strawberries in my tummy.
You a berry boy.
Oh, I hold my tummy.
Oh, no fear. No fear.
Yeah.
You know how you do on your show?
Yeah.
You do like double feature. What would you double feature a movie with?
Ooh.
So here's the thing. What would you double cereal this with? Like another flavor?
Yeah. You cut it.
Cut it.
What would you cut this cereal with?
And it can't be monster related. It's got to be a different cereal, right?
No, because the correct answer is always and will always be the perfect cereal to cut every cereal, Golden Grahams.
Okay. Interesting. That's interesting.
Golden Grahams is the perfect
cut. That's fucking interesting, man.
You can take any cereal.
That's fucking interesting.
Cut it with Golden Grahams and you're going to have a good fucking time.
I have an answer that's different.
Okay.
I would take my Count Chocula. You know what I cut it with? I would go...
Cocaine.
Yes. And that's going to be a country song.
Yeah.
Hell yeah. Cocaine and Chocula, baby.
Yeah.
No, I would cut it with...
I thought you were going to say Count Cocaine.
Count Cocaine. Yeah. Cocaine. Count
It's a
cocaine.
Vampire who's
and
addicted
whiskey.
To cocaine.
Let's get some whiskey up in there, right. too. Make you feel a little bit frisky.
You
put
that in the bowl. You do the bowl.
Oh, I'm frisky.
Yeah.
No, I would do Count Chocula with Quisp. Quisp, because it's an alien. I like the idea of a spooky alien and a count. You know, you just got crazy because you got your aliens, you got
sure.
your monsters.
You're building the lore.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm
yes.
about the flavor.
Yeah, but I love the Quisp flavor too. Honestly,
yeah,
I fucking love Quisp.
Oh, you can
hear it's back. I hear you can order it from Walmart directly. I don't
Not
know
an ad.
The quality though.
Sure.
is the same.
The Quisp you remember.
The Quisp quality.
I would also accept a sugar
the
smack.
The Quisp quality.
You could throw a sugar smack in there.
Sugar smack's good,
pretty
too,
good time.
Yeah.
It's a good molasses flavor.
Good damn molasses. That's thick. That is thick and viscous.
Certainly is.
Every episode, my version of thick and viscous is going to get more unpronounceable.
Yeah.
It's just going to sound
The last
like...
one was almost like a Wilford Brimley.
Oh, interesting. Diabetes.
Thick and viscous. So, nothing happened really in the 70s outside of your aforementioned Star Wars and maybe a little film called Halloween.
Yeah, it was just a good time for monsters
hey,
in general.
We're having a good time.
God damn it. As yes. mentioned, Halloween as we knew it really started in the 1930s, and every decade since, it got a little more oaky, it got a little more spooky. By the late 70s and heading into the 80s, mask making had reached a fever pitch, fueled by major motion picture source materials ranging from sci-fi to horror to Saturday morning cartoons, cereal.
Hell yeah.
Hell yeah. To comics, you know. It seemed like there was no end in sight to the good times. Then, in September of 1982, it all came crashing down.
Ooh.
Now, this is a rehash if you've listened to last year's episode.
Yeah.
But it is still applicable to Don Post. Also, I can say applicable?
Yeah, crazy.
I don't fucking get it. Before you, olds.
Yeah.
On September 28th, 1982, an otherwise completely healthy 12-year-old Mary Kellerman became violently ill and needed to be hospitalized. She died the next day. Shortly thereafter, six more people, all within the Chicagoland area, became violently ill and died very painful, very excruciating deaths. It was a terrifying mystery, as the only known commonality between the seven victims was that they all lived in the Chicagoland area. After a prompt and thorough investigation, it was determined that all seven victims had ingested Tylenol that was purchased from local pharmacies. Investigators got a hold of one of those Tylenol bottles from one of the unfortunate victims, and upon examination, immediately noticed the smell of almonds.
Delicious.
I love almonds, yeah. But not in this
sense. Almond soap in there.
Almond soap is good. Almond joy. You got your almond joy. I love a good nut. I love a nut.
I do. I know that about you.
I love a banana nut. You know, I just go crazy for banana nut. But.
What?
Yeah. That banana nut soda you got me?
Oh, yeah.
It's good.
Yeah.
But in this case, the smell of almonds is not a good sign.
No.
That particular pleasant scent is actually associated with a very deadly and toxic poison, potassium cyanide. Upon testing the remaining pills from the bottle used by one of the victims, a toxicologist found that the capsules had been tainted with potassium cyanide, but 3 times the amount needed to kill a human.
Oh.
Yeah. I don't think I found that in last year's episode, but yeah, that's a lot.
That's a lot.
That's a lot of fucking cyanide.
I've seen
it. Yes. ask a certain Jonestown about it.
Oh, yeah.
It was determined that whoever had tainted the Tylenol did so by purchasing a bottle, opening it up, tainting the pills with cyanide, and then simply putting the bottle back on the pharmacy shelf where an unsuspecting consumer could then purchase the fatal pills. Panic ensued, not just in the Chicagoland area, but across the country. As a result, copycat killings started to occur, and the purveying and unreasonable idea of Halloween candy being potentially poisoned reached new heights of belief.
That's why those fuckers are so hard to open now.
Exactly. Yeah, that is exactly why we have safety seals on pill bottles, was because of the Tylenol murders.
Also, Fatal Pills is a pretty cool band name.
Yeah. I go see that band. Yeah. They'd definitely play at a punk rock flea market.
Or they would be like... They'd be like shoegaze rock.
Okay.
You know, like a My Bloody Valentine.
Sure. Yeah. Parents were very scared, and they theorized, well, if some anonymous madman could poison the Tylenol, what's to stop them from poisoning the candy and killing the kids on Halloween?
They're going to kill that poor woman.
Damn it.
Sorry.
No, it's funny. It's funny. There has never been a war on Christmas, but there has always been a war on Halloween. And for the first time,
I've been kind of like, you know, doing my own part against Christmas.
Yeah, well, yeah.
It's okay. An independent.
Yeah. You're on
I'm
your
like
own.
A mercenary you against Christmas.
You got your own campaign going.
Yeah.
But I'm talking the overall societal war.
I'm doing a lot.
The society. Society.
This year?
Yeah.
Just wait.
All right. I'm excited. Hey, I'm in your corner.
Yeah.
I got...
You literally rent a corner of the house.
I do.
You're literally in my corner.
I am in your corner. But it's true. But in general, there's never been a war on Christmas, folks. It's all... Stop it. Just stop the madness. Just stop it.
There's shit on the shelves right now.
I know. Fucking... It's...
September.
And don't get me wrong. If you like Christmas, that's great. But don't come down on Halloween saying that it's the devil's holiday, you know, satanic orgies and child sacrifice, we got to get rid of it, because that's just bullshit.
Yeah, because most of the Christmas practices are actually satanic and paganistic in there.
I know this. You know this.
Yeah.
But
they know this,
too. I know. But because of the Tylenol murders, for the first time, Halloween was on the chopping block and
sure.
In serious danger of actually being canceled for good. This was not good news for mask-making companies. So, Don Post joined forces with Ben Cooper, Collegeville, and various other mask-making companies to discuss how can they save Halloween. It was decided that they would publish and put out a free booklet with ideas that would appeal to scared parents and provide these parents with ideas and safe alternatives. The plan worked. It eased the minds of scared parents, and Halloween was essentially saved, although from that point on, it would never be the same. The Halloween of years past, where kids would trick-or-treat into the wee hours of the night, completely unsupervised while parents waited at home, had now been replaced by designated trick-or-treating hours, daytime Halloween parades, and supervised parties.
I think a good representation of the
pre-Tylenol
was the film Meet Me in St. Louis.
I haven't seen it.
It's a Judy Garland film.
Okay.
There's a sequence in it that's Halloween.
Yeah.
And the kids are fucking nuts in it. Like, they're just burning shit in the roads. It's crazy.
And it's funny, like, the Halloween that we romanticize about, the ones that's always depicted in movies, I mean, that did exist. There was a time.
Yeah.
I mean, Halloween, the movies may over-exaggerate for the sake of the film, but my mom would literally, she dropped me off in town and let me loose.
Yeah.
She went back home and I would just trick or treat all night until I got tired. And my mom told me, when you get tired, go to your aunt's house and she'll call me and then I'll come pick you back up.
Right.
Unsupervised at night.
Same.
Just walking around by myself. All Hello the kids case, were baby. Doing that. Yeah, it was great.
Full.
Yeah.
Oh,
it was such a wonderful time.
It was best. Quick question for you. I asked Craig this.
Yeah.
Recently, did you have a preferred Halloween candy?
I didn't per se. Like I loved all the candies. I except for there were a few I did not like.
Mm.
And that was candy corn. Not a fan.
Yeah, I got a nostalgic place for it.
Yeah, I know you do. Also, black licorice.
Oh, I love a black licorice.
I can't do black licorice. Licorice in general, I'm not too keen on.
I will get unrealistically excited about a Twizzlers pull and peel.
Sure, okay.
I mean, even though I don't give a shit about them.
Yeah.
I mean, your Reese's cup, that's the gold standard.
It is good. I mean, yeah. I love a Snickers, you know, I just love, fucking love candy, man.
I think that's one. You get four more and else, or he'll show up.
Oh, yeah.
Don't fuck with me.
Sorry. Okay. No more. I won't. I'm good.
Milk Duds or Whoppers?
I'm a Milk Dud guy.
I'm a Whopper boy.
I mean, I love Whoppers. Don't get me wrong.
Okay.
But I love that I every time we go to a movie...
I don't like a sticky candy.
I gotta get that.
I don't like gummies either.
You know why I like Milk Duds?
Because
You get them in your mouth, you chew them up, they get all thick and viscous.
Yeah, and you just soak in it.
And it kind of sounds
like a Werther's.
Kind of sounds like wet macaroni. You get
that's what you're gonna go with.
And you're like,
sure. It's not what I was gonna say. What I was gonna say, I would probably have to bleep.
Well, I'm curious. What is it?
You're just kind of working a. All around in there, brother.
You know what? You gotta bleep that. But, you know, in the end, I guess it's better to have 2 hours of a designated trick-or-treating time than no Halloween at all.
Yes.
And now that Halloween has been saved, you would think that mask-making companies would bounce back. Especially given that continuing in the 80s, fantasy, horror, and sci-fi movies were more prevalent than ever before. And we got Michael Keaton's Batman.
Yes.
Thank you. I mean, that was a great Batman movie. Well, sadly, that was not the case. This was the beginning of the end, not just for Don Post Studios, but for nearly all mask-making companies.
You hate to see it.
I do. Yeah, I hate it. Overall sales started to decline. Labor was shipped overseas. Bad business decisions plagued everyone. And by the early 90s, the vacuum form mask companies that I mentioned last year, they were gone. No more. But something else occurred in the 1980s that affected the overall quality of the masks produced by Don Post.
Ooh.
Something that did not affect the vacuum form companies.
Ooh.
Only affected Don Post. It's just something that I didn't know about. It surprised me, but once I read up on it, it made sense.
Mm.
So to understand this event and its negative impact upon Don Post Studios, we need to go back and discuss some very troubling and tragic history.
Oh.
Yeah, it actually gets very serious now.
Guessing? But I think I'm way off.
Go ahead, guess.
Gas crisis.
No, actually, but that's a good guess.
Okay.
Yeah, gas crisis was huge in the late 70s.
Yeah.
But I think the gas crisis got resolved by the early 80s.
Okay. I don't know if that would affect...
Yeah, because plastics and petroleum. Yes, yeah. Yes. No. Actually, I wonder if that would have affected the vacuum form masks.
Right.
Maybe not Don Post so much. But no, that didn't. That's not what... okay. Yeah. Good guess, though.
Thank you.
Yeah. On June 5th, 1981, it was reported that 5 men from the Los Angeles area, previously fit and healthy, had suddenly come down with what appeared to be a serious lung infection. By the time the report is published, 2 of those men are dead, and the other 3 die shortly thereafter.
Wow.
That same day, a New York dermatologist called the CDC, to report a cluster of cases where seemingly healthy male individuals begin to suffer from an aggressive form of cancer referred to as Kaposi sarcoma. All reported individuals who had this form of cancer die within days. In the following days and weeks that ensue, many more men on the East and West Coast, again, all previously healthy, start exhibiting signs of what appears to be a strange form of pneumonia. The one common factor that all of these men share is that they are gay.
Oh.
On July 3rd of 1982, the New York Times publishes an article titled, quote, "Rare Cancer Seen in 41 Homosexuals," end quote. It's at this point that this strange and rapidly spreading disease is referred to as gay cancer. By the year's end, there are 337 reported cases, and of those cases, all die. As mysterious as this disease was, or is, it was determined that those who are infected are robbed of their immune system, and as a result of the compromised immune system, they end up dying from either pneumonia, cancer, or both. And as a result of this discovery, the term gay cancer was quickly replaced by the phrase gay-related immune deficiency, otherwise known as GRID. When that term GRID was published in May of 1982, the quickly spreading disease is now considered an epidemic. Now, it's extremely difficult to describe in words the abject fear, terror, and anxiety that was gripping the gay community at this time. No one was sure what was happening. No one was sure why it was happening or even how it was happening. The only sure thing was, if you got this strange new disease, you are going to die. There was no survival and absolutely zero support from the government, and actually zero support from the hospitals. Hospitals didn't want to touch anybody who was infected with whatever it was that was infecting these gay individuals. In an interesting and tragic turn of events, it was reported in July of 1982 that individuals who suffered from hemophilia had died shortly after receiving blood transfusions. Now, these individuals were not gay. And what was once considered to be a gay-only disease, gay cancer, was now a disease that could affect anybody, regardless of age, race, gender, or sexuality.
That's how Isaac Asimov died.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Oh, shit.
Blood transfusion.
Ah,
and actually, contracted HIV.
Kevin Peter Hall.
Yeah.
I played Predator.
Yeah.
Same thing. Yeah. So on September 24th, 1982, the term GRID was replaced by the more accurate description, AIDS, acquired immune deficiency syndrome.
You've been saying GRID a lot, and I've been holding back doing anything Tron related this entire time.
Thank
and it's
you.
Been really hard.
I know.
Because it's very serious.
It is serious. But yeah, they do say GRID a lot in Tron.
The GRID. A digital frontier.
Oh, yeah. Far out, man.
Yeah. Now, in time, scientists and doctors were able to figure out the specifics and the mechanics of AIDS, how one
Gregory
could get
Peck.
It.
Nope, that's
now,
not it.
It's hard to do Gregory Peck, right?
It really is.
You can't. I can't do a Gregory Peck. I can't do it.
He's hard to talk.
Gregory Peck.
I gotta watch Mockingbird again.
I know.
You know? I'll get there.
I could say Atticus Finch. Right?
Yeah, it's not bad.
It's not bad, but
yeah, it's not bad.
I can't do Gregory Peck.
Yeah, it's kind of like an Ian McKellen.
A little bit.
Yeah.
So inside.
Speaking of, never mind.
Nah. He's gay. Yeah.
He is gay.
It's
he
really gay. In time,
Gandalf.
Scientists. And, damn it.
I'm sorry.
It's okay. Eventually, they were able to figure out how AIDS worked, the mechanics behind it. I mean,
yeah, and they still kind of refused to help people.
No, yeah, sadly they did, yeah. Well, I should say, government definitely refused to help.
Yeah.
Ronald Reagan definitely refused to do anything.
Hi, jelly beans.
He loved jelly beans, but he would not acknowledge that there was a problem.
No.
Because he was a piece of shit. It was AIDS is essentially a sexually transmitted virus that they named HIV. It's a virus that could also be transmitted through infected blood transfusions, hence the hemophiliacs who who died. I mentioned Kevin Peter Hall, the guy who played the Predator.
Yes.
Got a blood transfusion. As a result, got HIV and died.
Yeah.
And I didn't know Isaac Asimov was also. Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. Yeah. Interesting. As a result of this knowledge, which was now being spread to the public in an effort to halt the ongoing epidemic, the material latex became a highly rationed, costly, and valued item of production. The easiest means to stop the spread of the HIV/AIDS epidemic
was, monster masks,
was through the use of a latex condom. And being that the entire United States was in the midst of an epidemic, and considering just how deadly the virus was, not just for those who were infected with it, but also those who had to treat the infected, latex gloves within the medical field were now in high demand. Matter of fact, the idea of rationing latex was such an issue that in the mid-1980s, the UK put out a public service announcement warning about the dangers of buying used and recycled condoms.
You meet on the moors, a man someone down the pub told you about. You say the code word, give him the special hand signal, 3 rubs, and the deal is done. You're buying a used condom. After all, it was cheaper, and the man did say he'd washed it. But how do you know? Just think of where it's been. Even if you know the man, never buy a used condom.
The three-finger rub, eh? As a result of this desperate need for the latex material, mask makers such as Don Post Studios had to cut back on the amount of latex that they would normally use when creating their over-the-top rubber monster masks. With proper care, a Don Post mask that was created before the 1980s would hold their shape and look just as good as the day that they were purchased. However, masks that were made during the AIDS epidemic were paper thin, unable to hold their shape, and in many cases would start to degrade and crumble within a year or two. I actually read an article from just a random mask collector.
Yeah.
And he had posted pictures, and I'm not going to post them or anything, but he talked about masks that he had purchased that were made in the 70s.
Fine,
still looked just as good, but a mask that he had bought in the 80s within a year, like, it was ready.
Flaky,
it was crumbling. Ready to be thrown out.
Yeah.
Yeah, it just did not last.
Crazy.
The fallout from the Tylenol murders, combined with the unforeseen consequences of the AIDS epidemic, and actually it was really a pandemic, because it ended up being a worldwide problem.
Right.
But yeah, but
you know, I'm gonna take a bold stance here.
Yeah,
I don't like AIDS.
Yeah, no.
I think it was bad.
Yeah, it's bad.
I think it was bad.
Still bad. Still around.
People, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Still here.
Yeah, I think it's bad.
Yeah. But the Tylenol murders, the AIDS epidemic, pandemic.
The Tylenol, I'm fine with. I'm cool with that.
Okay, it's cool.
But AIDS, not a fan.
No. The general decline in Halloween sales related to Halloween was also a strain. I mean, basically all of that combined was a strain too great to bear. And despite doing everything they could to weather the storm, Don Post Studios began to suffer. In 1989, Don Post Jr. stepped down from the company, and despite being sold to the American Greetings Corporation in 1996, Don Post Studios declared bankruptcy in 2001. And yet, it still trudged on, eventually being acquired by the Paper Magic Company and moved the production facilities to China. Finally, in 2012, workers arrived to the studio to clock in, only to find that the doors had been locked. Don Post Studios in 2012 was no more.
Wow,
closed for good.
Close to when the monster serials ended.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, while it's okay to shed a tear at the loss of one of the greatest mask-making companies of all time, we must remember that the influence of Don Post and his creations are far-reaching and have made an indelible mark on Halloween and pop culture. Now, if you've noticed, I didn't really discuss any specific Don Post masks. And that's because there's just too many of them. And every single mask that was ever produced has its own unique story. It doesn't matter what you Google. Everything has a fucking story and history to it. Don Post was one of the very first companies to produce, just for example, a hard plastic Darth Vader helmet.
Hell yeah.
Exactly. A hard plastic Stormtrooper helmet. They produced a Chewbacca mask. The whole thing was covered in hair. Yeah. I mean, it looked just like Chewbacca. It was crazy. Don Post pushed the envelope with the very idea of a werewolf when it put out a mask called the Timberwolf.
Ooh.
This was one of the coolest masks.
That sounds sexy.
It was actually very sexy. all those cool Don Post ads in the 70s always featured the Timberwolf. The Timberwolf. And it's because it was a werewolf mask that was lined with either gray or snow white hair.
Ooh.
And prior to that mask, I had never seen the idea of a white werewolf, so it stood out. It was definitely like a cool looking mask.
Silver fox.
Hell yeah. in the late 70s, Don Post put out a mask called B. Garrett Feta. It was a mask that was considered to be so gory and visceral with his realistic sculpt of torn flesh and muscle that some distributors refused to carry the mask on their shelves.
Wow.
Side note.
Fucking cowards.
Yeah, exactly. You know what they did with that mask?
What?
They just repainted it. Instead of painting it with flesh tones and blood, they just painted it with gray tones and said, hey, it's a zombie.
It's a zombie.
And then those same distributors were like, oh, yeah, it's fine.
Fuck yeah.
Yeah, fuck yeah. We'll put it on the shelf. Yeah. Wow. But one of the greatest Don Post contributions to pop culture comes in the form of a classic John Carpenter movie called
Starman.
Hell yeah, starring the
Jeff
dude.
Jeff Bridges.
Exactly, Starman the dude. Far out, man. Far fucking out, man.
You put me on the spot. I tried to pick the most obscure John Carpenter, and I think I might have got there. I don't know.
But honestly, Starman, it's a good film.
It's great.
It's actually a really good film.
There's only like two bad John Carpenter movies, and even those are pretty watchable.
Wait, which ones are you talking about?
The Ward and Ghosts of Mars.
Okay, yep.
Yeah.
I thought you were going to say Prince of Darkness.
Darkness fucking rules.
Prince of Darkness is fucking great. Yeah, I love it. Yeah, I love it. But no, we're talking about John Carpenter's 78 film, Halloween. Which tells the frightening story of a masked killer who terrorizes a small Illinois town on the night of Halloween. Now, what makes this film so unsettling? And I gotta say, this is one of my favorite Halloween films, not of the franchise, but of the season. Yes. Halloween,
yeah.
Is John Carpenter's Halloween. Because what makes it so unsettling is that there's nothing special or supernatural about the killer.
Nah.
He's not a raving lunatic. He's not some mystical evil spirit back from the dead.
He's just a big dummy with a crush.
Yeah, he's just a man. He's just a man. He's just a man who stalks slowly and methodically while wearing a white mask that almost appears to be lacking in emotional content.
I've been described that way as well.
I've seen your emotions.
A white man lacking.
Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But this mask, this white mask, I mean, it's just plain. It's got black holes where the eyes should be. It's almost as if the mask he is wearing is the perfect representation of his inner soul.
His id. It's almost like he was looking past the wall, looking through the wall to tonight.
Look at you go.
To this night.
Okay.
Go.
Thank you. As a kid, that mask... It scared the shit out of me. That movie
scared the shit out of me. Yeah. Did I ever tell you this story?
How old were you when you saw it?
Oh, man. I knew the mask before I knew the film.
Okay.
This is a great story for right now.
Hit me.
I was probably like 8-9 years old when this happened. It was one of those things where, like, it was my mom... And I think like her cousin or something was taking us trick-or-treating.
Yeah.
I don't remember what I was dressed up as, but I remember it was like a group of us, bunch of kids. We all went up to this one house, other people behind us that we did not know. Ding dong, trick-or-treat, get the shit. But I could just feel eyes on the back of me, you know?
Yeah.
And I turned around and there was a dude who in my mind, because I was 8 years old, was a fucking giant.
Sure.
Michael Myers. Turned around, looked at him. He just looked down at me, did the head tilt.
Yeah, yeah.
As you are one to do.
Sure.
And then I just did the, like, straighten up, look ahead, got my candy. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Worked my way past everybody and was running to the car, basically.
Oh, man, that's awesome.
And as I turned around to see if this monster was approaching, he stepped out from behind some trees.
Yeah!
And I just got the silhouette.
Yeah.
I just ran. And I was like, we gotta go. Right when I got in the car, I was like, we gotta go. We gotta get to a different house. And they were like, what's going on? What's happening? And there was a conversation because of it. And just like in a horror movie, that's when there was a knock on the window.
That's a great Halloween.
Right? And that's then he was like, this is for you.
Aw.
Yeah. Okay. And he just like handed candy into the car.
Aw. That's cool.
Right?
Nice.
So that mask haunted me for years.
I hadn't seen the movie yet.
No. Okay. And he said, like, this is for you. He said it to my mom.
Yeah.
Like, to give to me.
Sure.
So I didn't hear any of that conversation. I just, like, froze in terror. I still didn't know, you know? And, it wasn't until I was, like, you know, 11, 12 that I actually saw the film on the VHS.
Okay.
It was floating around the house.
I don't remember the year that it came out on TV with the extra scenes.
Yes, yeah. I have that on Blu-ray.
I think that's the first time I saw it. So I had not seen The Mask prior.
81.
Okay.
It had to be.
That's the first time. I was young.
81, 82, because they filmed all the extra stuff when they made part two.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was the first time I saw it was on TV with the extra scenes. So it was all new. It was happening all at once. It was all filmed in real time.
Yeah, like a documentary.
Like a documentary. Thank you.
Yeah.
But it was frightening. I didn't know anything about it. It just scared the shit out of me. I mean, the mask, like, unlike a monster mask, we're just talking about the Michael Myers mask, it is just an emotionless blank slate.
The shark in Jaws.
It's creepy. And then what I learned later on was that it was a Don Post mask used. And not only was it a Don Post mask, I know this, you know this, but some of you might not. It's a mask of William Shatner's face.
Yes.
I got to go into it. You see, a few years earlier, the television show Star Trek was hugely popular, and Don Post had acquired the rights to produce official Captain Kirk and Spock rubber masks, complete with hair. So when John Carpenter was filming Halloween, they needed to find a mask for the killer. And if I remember correctly, they originally considered a mask of Emmett Kelly, also a Don Post mask. The sad clown face is Emmett Kelly. But they ended up buying a Captain Kirk mask, William Shatner mask. And for the purposes of the movie...
I gotta stop you, though.
Please.
Because here's some real nerdy shit.
Go.
The misconception is that it was a Captain Kirk mask, but it was actually a repackaged Captain Kirk mask used to promote the film...
Devil's Reign.
No.
No?
Kingdom
of Spiders?
Yes.
Oh, nice. Yes.
Kingdom of Spiders.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I've seen debates going back and forth.
I mean, it's the same mask.
Yeah.
It's just a different fucking backing board on the top of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So all they did was they tussled up the hair, they painted the face white, and they cut out the eye holes to make it bigger, you know?
Got rid of them sideburns.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Exactly. Yeah. So, you know.
And by they, you mean the legendary Tommy Lee Wallace.
Yep. Thank you. Thank you for that info. Yeah, it's funny. Gonna get a little sidetracked here. Yeah, because I've seen people say that, well, no, it wasn't a Captain Kirk mask. It was actually a mask for the Devil's Reign, then also it was actually a mask for the Kingdom of the Spiders.
Yeah.
But then I kept thinking, Don Post wouldn't do a sculpt for Kingdom of the Spiders.
They just rebranded the same
thing. Right, they took
the
Captain Kirk mask and put it out. Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, exactly. Thank you. Thank you for that nerdery.
I'm the movie nerd guy.
You're the movie nerd.
And now you're in my kingdom.
I'm in your kingdom of
I've read way too much about this movie.
No, it's there's a lot. And it's all good stuff. Yeah. Michael Myers, one of the most terrifying cinematic killers. Nothing more than William Shatner's face.
Yeah.
Which I mentioned the movie The Devil's Reign. If you have not seen that, it's a great movie. It involves Satanism.
It's wonderful.
It is awesome. Ernest Borgnine, fucking great role. But in the movie Devil's Reign, Captain Kirk, William Shatner, whatever the fuck he's called, gets abducted into a satanic a group, and anybody who becomes part of the group, they lose their eyes. So at one point, there's a scene of William Shatner with no eyes, and if you pause, you're like, well, that's just Michael Myers right there. I mean, it's the flesh covered.
But... I believe what you were going to say was, Michael?
Yeah, thank you. Well, guess what?
Wait, what?
That Don Post connection doesn't end there.
Oh.
Yeah, the Don Post connection to the Halloween films continued.
It keeps on going, baby.
It does, baby. It don't stop. It's like an ever-ready battery. It went 1982. The film Halloween 3 came out. And that film, it's funny when I actually think about the plot. It revolves around a sinister plot that about rubber monster masks
yes.
that are designed to kill children.
Fuck them.
Yeah. That's basically the movie, right? I mean, Stonehenge is involved.
Stonehenge.
Where the demons dwell and the banshees wail. Tom Atkins. He's in the movie.
He is.
Fuck yeah.
Yeah, just day drinking.
Yeah, there's a lot of day drinking. Yeah.
A lot of day drinking.
Now, in that movie, there are three masks. A witch, a pumpkin, and a skull.
Halloween 3. The Halloween 3. Yes. That's why it's called that.
Yeah. All three of those masks are featured heavily in the film because, honestly, they're part of the plot.
Yeah.
And even the Don Post studio, the factory itself, is featured in the film, which is, I mean, it's really cool to see.
It's just cheap production.
You're just saving money, baby.
You don't got to build shit.
No. That is ingenuity right there. Of those three masks, the witch, which is called Hagatha,
yes.
and the skull, those were actually existing Don Post masks that existed prior to the movie.
Very true.
And if I remember correctly, I mentioned the sculptress Pat Newman,
yeah.
who sculpted the Glenn Strange. I believe she's the one who actually sculpted the skull.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Fuck yeah.
So the pumpkin, though, was the new... It was the brand new mask made for the movie. And Don Post also was going to release the mask to the public.
You can also tell that it's the only one that was sculpted for the film because it's the only one that has an actual silver shamrock imprint in the mask. Oh,
in the rubber?
Yeah.
Ah, nice.
Yeah.
Excellent. That's cool.
I can tell you every story about every mask in every fucking Halloween film.
Yeah. You know, we're going to skip that.
Yeah, you probably could.
We are going to skip that.
We could actually do a special just about that.
We could, yeah. actually, for another mask making
Do you have special. A preference of the Halloween 3?
Of the masks?
Yeah. Hanging right above our heads here.
I really like the skull.
Yeah, I do too. It's my favorite.
It's iconic. And there are so many variations of that skull
yeah, it's mask, great.
Different painted versions over the years, because it's an old mask, actually. I don't remember when it was first made, but... there's a guy, well, I know him. His name's Rudy on Instagram. He's the Crimson Ghost Mask Room. Lives up in Northwest Indiana. Okay.
Rudy?
Rudy. He has just a lot of just the skull mask. All the different variations.
Wow. That's
yeah,
cool.
It's really cool. So,
could you imagine lights out all of the all the glowing ones? At you?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's cool.
Yeah, it is cool.
Yeah, it's cool.
Yeah, it is cool.
Yeah. No easy way for you to get back into this.
No. Well, actually, we're finally at the end.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Okay.
And finally, let's end this episode with a bit of good news.
Ooh.
Some good news, everybody.
Yeah, it's back. Bigger than bolder.
I am happy
Bigger
to
and
say,
blacker.
Yes. On Christmas Day, 2022, we were all given a gift. And that gift was the news that the mask-making company Trick or Treat Studios, yes. located out on the West Coast, had purchased Don Post Studios and is reviving the legendary company. Trick or Treat announced on their social media, quote, "As lifelong fans of these legendary companies, we are honored to be able to carry on the legacy in innovative designs. Moving forward, we will be visiting the back catalogs and bringing these designs new life. We can't wait to show you what we have planned for the future." End quote. And that, my friends, is the brief history of Don Post Studios.
I'm pretty sure Trick or Treat got like all the existing molds and stuff, right?
If there were existing molds, yes.
Yeah.
I know they also acquired Topstone.
Yes.
Which is really cool. That's another whole episode for another year.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Those are your guys.
Those are my guys.
Yeah.
I love the old Topstone mask, but yeah. That is the brief history of Don Post. What'd you think?
That's great.
Any thoughts?
That's good.
Nice.
I think I kept my interrupting to a minimum.
I like interruptions. They're good. It's a fun time. Makes me feel like I have a friend.
Yeah. They pay me to do this.
I know. Yeah. Wait, you're getting paid?
Shit.
Yeah. Who's paying you?
Nobody.
Who's doing it?
Nobody's paying
Sean?
No.
Laura?
No.
The touring Colombian? Okay. I do want to quote my sources, though, at this point, because I'd gotten a lot of information from various articles.
Yeah, throw it out there.
Dangerous Minds actually put out a very good article about the history of Don Post that illustrated his relationship with the clown Paul Wenzel.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Elvira, actually, on YouTube, I think it's Monsterama.
Okay.
Elvira does like a little short 15-minute segment about the overall history of Don Post, and she shows some really cool photos. Yeah, it's really nice. Huh. She goes into the history of the calendar masks, and that was also good and nice. Also, all the information pertaining to the timeline of HIV and the AIDS epidemic comes from HIV.gov. I didn't want to mention that because if I mentioned HIV, I figured you would immediately understand the relationship between the AIDS and Don Post. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I didn't want to throw it out there, but yeah. And then there's VernLangdon.com, which has some brief history on Vern Langdon, who I believe sadly passed away in 2011, but they have links to his music albums.
Oh, cool.
And it's like creepy clown music.
Love it.
It is great. It is absolutely great. Another little side note, Vern Langdon made one of the most famous masks of all time. And I wanted to save it until after we got done talking about Post.
You want me to throw my references out here too real quick?
Yeah, please, cite your sources.
GeneralMills.com actually has an extensive history of their monster cereals.
Delicious.
A website I found called HistoryDaily.org. Medium.com had a really good article about Fruit Brute and its, you know, discontinuation and evolution of Yummy Mummy. Toy Galaxy did a really good episode on YouTube.
Cool.
About the monster cereals. Pretty much it.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
Okay.
Vern Langdon.
Yes.
He made a mask that is considered kind of like the holy grail of masks. It's one of the most famous masks of all time, and it's called the Vern Langdon Zombie.
Oh.
If you're not familiar with what this mask looks like,
I think I've seen this.
If you just see a picture of it and don't know the title, you're not going to think it's a zombie mask because it kind of looks like a reptile snake man with blonde beetle haircut.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Vern Langdon was kind of, well, based on my description, you should be able to figure out, dude was kind of, he was a fun-loving guy, man. You know? But he made a mask of a zombie that I don't know how else to describe it other than it looks like a reptile guy with a Beatles haircut that's bleach blonde.
I've always... Man, yeah, I don't know how you describe it. If you've ever seen Creepshow, it's kind of like the Ted Danson waterlogged creature.
Yeah, I see the resemblance.
Yeah, but with a blonde wig.
Yeah. Interesting thing about that mask, a lot of people associate it with Don Post, but apparently Vern Langdon sculpted and made that mask after he left Don Post. So it's not really a Don Post mask.
Yeah.
It's just a Vern Langdon mask, but because of his relationship with Don Post, people just equate the two together. And what makes this mask so cool and special is, as far as I know, there are only two known copies in existence.
Wow.
And one of them I saw just at Horror Hound just a month and a half ago. Rudy, who I mentioned, Crimson Ghost Mask Room, has the only known copy that is unaltered. Now, as I mentioned, I believe there's only two known copies.
Yeah.
One copy has been altered. I can't remember if it's been repainted or repurposed, but Rudy has the only existing Vern Langdon zombie mask.
That's crazy.
And he keeps it lock stock behind it.
Oh yeah,
it is sealed up. He brought it to Mask Fest and it was sealed away. You can look at it, you can take photos of it, but nobody is touching this mask, and it is in pristine condition.
That is crazy that he would even take it somewhere.
Yeah, I'm kind of curious how much it's worth, because it is like a holy grail of masks.
Yeah,
but the Vern Langdon zombie is,
and let's be real too, mask collectors are fucking freaks.
They are.
They will throw down the money for this stuff.
And with that being said, I'm going to put out an apology because there are a lot of cool mask makers.
They're
and,
great.
And mask
I love
collectors
it.
Out there.
But we're some of those freaks.
Yeah.
We just don't have money.
Just like any fan base, it's also very toxic. There sure. are some fucking sure. assholes who are going to look at what I say, or going to listen to everything that I say, and they'll be like, well, Epion 5, actually, that message you're referring to from the universe, yeah, fuck off. I'm trying my fucking best. If you don't like what I said, start your own podcast.
They probably already have one.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, there's just so much information. Like I mentioned, I didn't really talk about a specific Dom Post mass because... there is, we could do an episode just about the Halloween 3 skull mask.
Yeah, we really you know? Could.
It's crazy. So, yep, that's all really I got to say about this episode. I hope you all enjoyed this Halloween episode.
That's
was
great.
Was it spooky for you?
It wasn't spooky, but it was very informative.
Yeah, thank you. I tried, man.
I learned about AIDS.
Yeah. that was, there were two surprises. I didn't know about the clown.
Yeah.
And the basically, because of Ringling Brothers, that kind of pushed Don Post into wanting to make over-the-top masks.
Weird. It's a weird origin story.
And then I did not know, it didn't even cross my mind that the AIDS epidemic had any impact on the Halloween industry.
I feel like I was, like, in the ballpark of, like, rationing.
You were close with,
you
the,
know?
With the gas crisis?
Yeah.
But no,
it was just too early.
It was latex.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah.
So, promos, you got anything coming up you want to talk about?
Well, first off, I'm hoping that year three of our Halloween special year contains the same story about killer Tylenol. I'm really looking forward to hearing that for the third time.
Honestly... probably will, because that one incident...
It's kind of a cornerstone of the whole situation.
It really did affect everybody.
So that's really exciting.
I tried to keep it brief this time, just the bullet points.
Good. Yeah. You did good. But what kind of friend would I be to you if I did not give you any kind of shit for anything that you do?
That's how I know you care.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I do. Oh. So, promo time.
Yep.
If you're listening to this today, day that this comes out, which would be what? If you're listening to this today on the 3rd, I will be at the Irvington Oddities Market on the 7th, I believe?
The Saturday. Weekend.
This Saturday. It's like 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. It's a one-day little pop-up show.
Nice.
What else? I'll be at the Living Dead Weekend in Evans City, Pennsylvania, October 20th through 22nd. Also, on this very feed that you were listening to, all October long, we will be doing episodes every Tuesday. I guess I can just tell the people now.
Tell them.
Next week, we will be doing Dracula Dead and Loving It.
Nice.
Just kind of filled the space there.
Not we, but you and...
me and Carly will be doing that. And on... hey, if you only listen to the M3 with E5 episodes, the rest of the episodes are just about... films,
it's
cult
a whole
films,
other world
horror films. I'll bring all of the nerddom that you just heard me talking about.
Ugh.
These fucking Halloween masks. That's just floating in my head. It's a disease.
Like Ewok characters. That's just in my head.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Chuck a truck.
What?
Paplu. Chief Chirpa.
All right. He's gone. We
DJ
lost.
DJ Low Gray, the medicine man. Can I get a yub nub?
Yub nub. You're welcome. After Dracula Dead and Loving It, my friend Chase and I will be doing all of the Rob Zombie films.
Oh.
We are recording part 2
You're
tomorrow.
You're clenching your fists.
I just want to watch real movies again. So stick with us every Tuesday. We're releasing stuff. Every single Tuesday this month. Over to you, sir.
It'll happen. I do have some announcements, actually, that are going to happen. Sadly, I had to cancel Memphis Comic-Con, which I was supposed to do recently.
Ghosts.
No, it was... well, I guess technically ghosts could fuck with my car.
Your car
I had
was
car
haunted.
Issues.
Your car was haunted.
So I could not drive down to Memphis, so I had to be one of those douche lords and be like, hey, come out to Memphis. Hey, guess what? I'm not going to be there. Bye!
Yeah.
But I think my car issues have been resolved for the most part.
Yeah, it took a lot of money. A
lot of money. Let's just say in a span of 30 days, I've spent...
You don't need to tell them.
No, I will tell them.
No,
fuck
you don't
off.
Need to tell them. What you can tell them is you spent more repairing your car than you did as a down payment.
Yep. I did.
Yeah.
And I know people are going to be like, well, Epion, that's not very... what kind of economical decisions are you making? Listen, motherfucker. I know how this shit works. It's because nobody would give me a fucking loan for a good car. So
I don't know why you're getting so angry.
I'm fucking angry.
You just got to tell them where you're going to be.
Oh, yeah, okay. Well, as long as my car doesn't give me any more fucking issues.
Yeah, I think you'll be fine.
I will actually be in Chicago at the end of this month, October 27th and 28th, I believe. I think that's Friday night.
You're doing
Saturday.
A two-day?
Two-day, yeah. It's a two-day thing.
Oh, wow, okay.
Yeah. So the Horror House, a very cool storefront in Chicago that specializes in horror merchandise of all kind. Have you been there?
No.
It's really fucking cool. Yeah, and the guys that run it, they do exhibit.
I don't like Chicago. You know this.
I know. I like to visit. I don't want to live there. But
the traffic.
And the park. Absurd. The parking. Don't get me started.
I can't even eat hot dogs anymore.
Oh, my God. No.
And the fucking Malort.
Abort Malort. Yeah.
We don't need it.
No.
Get it out of here.
No. You know, I mean, I'm all pro-choice, except in this particular instance. Whatever.
Yeah,
fuck
you should
it.
Choose not to drink Malort.
Yeah. But the Horror House, awesome store in Chicago. They did this last year. It's like a pop-up event that they, I believe they held it at a place called the Emporium, which is a barcade.
Oh, yeah, I know where that is. Yeah.
And it's basically like a little Halloween convention. So they're going to have like a limited number of vendors. I will be one of them, but
one of the limited.
I will be one of them.
Wow.
But they're, I mean, it's going to be cool. Like I don't want to insult shows and say like that these shows are lacking quality, but like the guys that run it, they're like, you know, we want to handpick the people that have stuff
curated.
To offer. Yeah. It's curated. Yeah. So I think like last year, Adam's Art Box was there.
Stephen LaRose Holiday probably there.
Probably.
Yeah.
Because he's cool.
Well, he has a lot of stuff in the store.
He does. Yeah. And he's a cool guy. I like him. I do actually like him.
Yeah, he's a nice guy.
He's cool. October 27th to 28th, I will be up in Chicago vending at the... I actually don't even know what the show is called, but it's going to be at the Emporium. So I'll have spray-painted heads, stickers, and
check
prints.
The Horror House website or Instagram for all the details about
for all that.
Yeah.
And other than that, that's the only show I got this year. So if you want to see me in person, come out to the Emporium in Chicago because I will be there. And then after that, I will go into seclusion and hiding.
You got any sales coming up?
I'll have a couple more ready-made sales in November, but I'm going to cut it off at the end of November so that way everybody gets their shit for Christmas.
Nice. Okay.
People want to give stuff as gifts.
Right.
And I really can't, I won't be able to take any orders in December. It's just cutting it too close.
And you're also talking about maybe getting some smaller items.
Yeah, like some embroidered patches.
Yeah, more sticker designs.
Some patches.
All that stuff.
Yeah, I'm looking into, I've been pricing some patches, patch designs.
Yeah.
So
there you go. There's some announcements. That's good stuff.
Good stuff, everybody.
For the information on this man, where's it at?
If you know, just Google Epion 5. Honestly, it's easy. I'm the only thing that pops up. Instagram, EPYON5. I'm on Facebook, EPYON5.
Sure, you don't check that as often, though.
Nah, fuck Facebook.
Slim to none.
And actually, I'm not on Facebook at all anymore.
That's great. You're for the best.
Stop using it.
It's way better.
I'm really just on Instagram at this point.
The podcast you are listening to is available on Instagram at ElectricMonsterPod. Myself, I am on Instagram at AeroSoulPro. That's it.
Yeah, that's it. Everybody, thanks for joining this episode. Thanks for listening to the Illustrated.
Yeah.
Not really.
No. Yeah, that's great.
Audio-strated. The audio-strated history.
The illustrated history.
Don Post.
Of Donald Post.
Donald Post.
Yeah.
And with that being said, everybody, I hope you have a great Halloween.
Yeah.
Get spooky, get ooky, get dressed up, eat all the candy. I don't fucking care.
Listen to the other episodes this month.
Yeah, there's a lot of spooky stuff coming out.
It's going to be stupid.
Stupid spooky.
It's all
scary.
Fucking Rob Zombie.
Yeah! My Rob Zombie. That's my Rob Zombie.
Oh, I thought Rob Zombie was here.
All right.
Get out of my house.
Scary. Did you know I'm a vegan?
I did, actually, because I've watched so many interviews with you.
And with that, everybody, tschüss, auf Wiedersehen und bis später.
That's correct, Wendy. We all wear masks, metaphorically speaking.